FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. Today's November 13th, 2017. So technology, crowdsourcing, all of these things are changing industries, even the most staid industries, in ways that were unimaginable just a few short years ago. Who only knows what robots will do and artificial intelligence. But one profession that is being impacted in some ways in a negative way and other ways a positive way, especially where the clients are concerned, is the legal profession. And crowdfunding of projects, highly automated and just using technology to get the best possible value for your legal dollar is really making a big impact. And, oh yeah, by the way, if you want to get involved in the show, we love getting your emails. Answer all. Just send it to kl at kerrylutz.com. Twitter feed at kerrylutz. So getting back to it, technology is really impacting the legal profession and in very positive ways if you're a consumer of legal services. Starting out in a few branches, but it's going to get better as it goes along. And Amy Wan is with us. And Amy, you started a company called bootstraplegal.com. And hey, we're really thrilled to have you on.
Thanks, Kerry. Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, so you were a lawyer, partnership track and all that. And all of a sudden you deviated from the course, which is unusual because nobody ever leaves the firm.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm still a relatively young attorney, even though I was a partner at a firm, and kind of looked forward at what my life was going to be like for the next, you know, two or three decades. Saw some changes in the industry that I thought threatened the way that, you know, we were going to be doing business in the next 10 years. And I thought, you know what, I can let other people eat my lunch, or I can eat everyone else's lunch. So I decided to do the latter. I left the firm, left the partnership, started my own company. And what my company does now is I'm basically trying to automate my old job. So I create software that automates the drafting of highly complex legal documents that people need to raise capital. And the first vertical that we've started out in is in real estate syndication and crowdfunding.
Right. So we're talking, private placement memorandums, things of that nature. I used to put them together myself once upon a time. Then I determined it was really a better deal to have other people do it. And so all of this can be automated in such a way as to really keep the cost down, because, you know, to get a private placement memo, you know, for $2 million deal could easily cost you $50,000. And all the law firm does is go into their form library, click a bunch of boxes, get rid of some clauses that don't apply, and presto, you know, there's your $50,000, and they spent 25 hours to be charitable?
Well, I would like to think it's a little bit more difficult than that. You know, what I used to do as an attorney is, you know, if a new deal came in, I would go back to the last deal that I could remember that was a similar deal, and use that as a template. And obviously you're like replacing all for the, the names of the parties, the names of the entities. Hopefully the structure would be the same. Sometimes it isn't, right? But there still is a lot of fine tuning, right? Mm-hmm. Just producing a first draft, I would say, would take, you know, at least a couple dozen hours, because, you know, you never know. Maybe almost everything is the same, but, maybe they're structuring the deal a little bit differently, or maybe there's two properties, not one. And then you're like going through 100 pages and pluralizing each property, the properties, you know, or, you know, maybe this one has two classes of investors, not one class. Right. And so all those little tiny changes make a lot of work for the attorney, but sometimes it's not, you know, highly valuable valuable work for the client. And so I thought, hey, if there's a way to automate this, right, and basically come out with a perfect template every single time, wouldn't that be fantastic, right? And so that's what I did. So we built, you know, a prototype of a system. It's got over 800 variables today. It will throw together for you blind pools and semi-specified funds and single asset syndications. It'll do, you know, offerings under different regulations. It gives you choices for some of the different but most popular financial structures in terms of how to structure your deal. You know, we can automate the drafting of, you know, risk factors for specific types of assets, whether it's multifamily or public storage, right? And so I basically went through, you know, I licensed a copyright with my old firm, went through, you know, years and years of real estate fund documents, basically created a huge library and, you know, connected it all with a questionnaire.
Right. So I always like the idea of taking what's inherently a very inefficient process and turning the systems loose on it. Kind of, I spent my work life doing that. And God knows the legal profession doesn't just thrive on inefficiency. It's their reason for being, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, yes and no, depends on who's listening. I would say that traditionally over time, the legal model has evolved to actually appreciate inefficiency, right? Because lawyers bill by the hour. I think after the recession, there was for a brief period of time, a lot of interest towards flat fees, towards reducing legal. You've seen the size of in-house counsel increase, and now people are spending a lot more money, you know, increasing the or investing in automated systems for their companies, right, to, for example, produce draft documents as opposed to outsourcing it out to a law firm. At the same time, I do think there's kind of a generation of attorneys that's kind of up and coming. And we're a little younger, a little bit more tech savvy. And we don't necessarily mind the fact that maybe we're charging less, right? Like, at least in my book, I think that, hey, if I can decrease the cost of a PPM or an offering for one of my clients, then that actually allows me to open we're growing the pie, you know. The pie used to be very small because it was only a certain demographic of people who could afford legal services. If you can make it cheaper, you can actually have a lot more clients. That's what I truly believe. And ever since I, you know, came out with my product, I've actually had a demographic of people approach me that, you know, normally would not ever look at real estate syndication or crowdfunding, right? Traditionally, it's always been commercial real estate deals. I'm actually having residential folks approach me now for, you know, small blind pools because they think, hey, the cost is reasonable. We can actually do this now.
Mm, it's fascinating. And it's just a case where technology is obsoleting the old models. And really, the networks involved in raising these funds in the past either had the big guys and, you know, you really had to jump through hoops, in which case they didn't need a PPM anyway because they're sophisticated investors usually, or you had the small ones, friends and families, and then there was kind of the middle, but it was very hard to access that middle market. What's the access like now?
You know, I would say that it's still largely like that, right? I think for the people on the lower end of the spectrum that you just mentioned, to the extent that they have ambitions and want to grow, even if they are starting with friends and family money, oftentimes they'll contact me and they'll want to, you know, do things the proper way because now we have the internet. And with the internet, you hear all the stories about things that go wrong, right? Husband divorces wife and, you know, you had taken some money from your in-laws and now they want it all back and more. You know, there's definitely still the folks at the upper echelons, but I think in the middle, I think we are starting to see an increase, right? Like with trends like crowdfunding, where you can now go out and talk about the fact that you are raising money. You couldn't do that you know, right. 3-4 years ago. That's really helping all these middle market people. And, you know, the fact that, you know, we've got the internet now, that helps spread things out. And with technology, again, like you can decrease the cost of a lot of things, and that helps too.
Interesting. So what's your typical client look like here?
Yeah, so I've got kind of a range. You know, I've got, you know, the people who approach me and they're just getting started. They're doing their first syndication. Maybe they need a little bit more coaching or a little bit more handholding, but they want to like at least start their first, you know, fund or their first project to start building a track record. And then I've got people on the other end of the spectrum who, you know, they've been doing this for 20 years and they can just snap their fingers because they've got a huge base of investors and raise like $10 million in a week.
Interesting. So it's all over the board then.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So what about somebody who's kind of just getting started in this? What would you tell them to do? What are the three things they should do before they call you?
Oh, man. If there is one big piece of advice I could give, it's ABN, OSB networking, right? Because for people who are getting started, they think, oh, I need to go find first the property and I need to get all this legal done. No, what you need to be doing a year before you ever find your first property is networking with potential investors, because by the time you turn around and you need them, it's too late to develop that relationship. So that's probably number one. Number two for beginners is go get a mentor, right? And don't just get any mentor, get a mentor who, you know, if you are doing real estate syndication, hey, they're a syndicator. They've been doing it for several years. If you are specifically interested in public storage, go find someone who has done public storage and understands the asset class well, right? And preferably, if they have a network of investors that you can draw on, that is always very helpful. And probably the third thing is do it the right way, right? I feel like every time I log on to LinkedIn nowadays, as a securities attorney, I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack because it's it's just like general solicitation hub, right? Where everyone's talking about their deals, no one's got any disclosures. And man, if I were a hungry, ambitious SEC enforcement staff attorney, all I would have to do is log on to LinkedIn and just, it's like all there in front of me, all the people I'm going to want to do enforcement actions against. Right. So do it the right way because, you know, maybe when you're young, you feel like you have nothing to lose, except maybe your credibility and reputation. But, you know, as you get older, you've got families, you have money to lose, you have, you know, you start worrying a lot more about your reputation. And, you know, you certainly do not want to get in trouble with any regulators, because once you have that stain on your reputation, whether through a formal enforcement action or not, you know, if the regulators don't trust you, what makes you think that the investors will?
Yeah. So ounce of prevention, you know, it was that old thing. It was Secretary of Labor Donovan, I think he once said. He actually beat the charges, acquitted. And then he said, where do I go to get my reputation back? And, you know, that's the situation that you could be faced with.
Yeah.
If you don't do everything right. I mean, the SEC, they don't like to go after the big guys. They prefer the small people who are like easy pickings and easy to get that judgment against and the cease and desist order and all that. So what you're saying really, really is very wise. If you're thinking of doing this, I always used to tell my partners, nobody ever went to jail for, you know, one thing, but the number of people sitting in jail for selling unregistered securities, you would be surprised how many are there.
And I think I heard one attorney, I'm totally going to steal this quote, but I think I heard one attorney say once, being under investigation or under an SEC inquiry is like, you know, being in hell, except you're not allowed to die.
I think that applies to any investigation and any major litigation that you're personally involved in. It's really purgatory. And if you can avoid it, then you owe it to yourself to do it. And I'm sure, Amy, you can talk about instances where people have screwed up all day long. And, you know, some of them are kind of funny, but in a way, they're really tragic because you could avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's only funny like 20 years later.
Even then. But, you know, sometimes things your clients do are just so stupid. They defy any any logical anything. You know, you just shake your head because, you know, that's just the way it works. But I'm sure you're going to want to talk to Amy, get in touch, go to her website. How do we find you, Amy?
Yeah, sure. So it's very simple. It's just bootstraplegal.com. If they are interested in real estate syndication or crowdfunding on the legal aspect, they can just click a button and schedule a consultation with me. And if they just want to, you know, follow me and see what I'm doing, they can find me on LinkedIn. It's Amy Y. Wan, W-A-N. The only thing I'll say is I seem to get a lot of random connection requests these days, and I'm half convinced that it's bots. So do me a favor, if you're going to connect with me, just write a little note, say that you listen to this podcast, and I'll accept. I just, you know, don't accept the ones without notes anymore.
Yeah, well, you know, you get overwhelmed with this stuff after a while. Social media is just wonderful. You connect with people that you would never otherwise connect with. The only problem is some of these people you never would have connected and you didn't want to connect with in the first place.
Yeah.
And now you got a stalker. And who needs that? We have enough enough issues going on here, Amy. We don't have to look for further complications of our already complicated lives. Amy, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Good luck on this. I'd love to hear things that cut down on billable hours. I think you're definitely onto something, and I think you're at the early stages of it. And we wish you the best of luck. Oh, hey, question for Amy, myself. Email, again, kl@carrielutz.com. Be a part of the show. Twitter feed, once again, is @CarrieLutz, and that's just as good as emailing. We check it. And, of course, the Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Amy, good luck, and we'll look forward to speaking with you again.
Great. Thank you so much.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to FinancialSurvivalNetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.